Laura Archibald is sitting in the studio. She's right across from me here in the studio. This is amazing. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Considering your
this
film,
is it.
This, your film is premiering, or not premiering, but it's playing again in 45 minutes.
Yes.
And I saw it last night, and it was amazing. So I don't even know. I need to ask you this.
Okay.
Do you have a film background?
Should I answer that on the grounds that it might incriminate me? No, I do not.
Okay. So I'm guessing, how many times have you been down to the village? Like, where did this idea, you probably had lots of people ask you this, but what sparked this idea? Because it's amazing.
Well, I'm New York's one of my favorite places, and I've probably been back and forth, 20, 25 times, and love the village. And I've always loved music, so this is just sort of an extension of it's a vanity project in that it's everything I love, so wrapped into one.
So basically, how did you? So you were going? Did you go down to the Bitter End and talk to people there and get to
I
know
did
the
actually,
history?
Some of the interviews were in the Bitter End.
I know.
And
I saw
interviewed
that.
Paul Colby, who has owned or run the Bitter End for since about I think 64
yeah
so I think
yep.
And so went out to Paul's house, and of course you know, things snowball once you get started. Once you meet, you get one interview, things do start to snowball, and oh, you should talk to this person, or you know, and so that's how that really got put together. But seeing the old clubs and just getting the feel for what it may have been like at that time.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I had a friend of mine when I was down there named Steve McGraw. He used to run a club called McGraw's in the village. And the first place he took me was down to Bleecker and LaGuardia, where the Bitter End was. He goes, see this little tiny place here? This has a magic all of its own. So when I was watching the film last night, I thought, oh my God, I can't believe the amount of people that have played in that little tiny... Like, all these clubs are so small.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story in itself. So can you tell some of the people who you've actually interviewed that are in for footage in this film?
I actually today, for another purpose, had to go back and count all the interviews, and I think I'm up to 40. I think I interviewed 40 people. Chris Christopherson, mm-hmm. and Jose Feliciano, John Sebastian, Carly Simon and her lovely sister Lucy, Carolyn Hester was the first Joan Baez, mm-hmm. really. I don't want to say the first Joan Baez. She was the big deal in the early 60s in the village before Joan came along. Who else did
Buffy
we get
St. Marie.
In there? Buffy St. Marie, Eric Anderson.
Phil Oakes.
Well, I didn't interview Phil Oakes,
no,
though.
But he's mentioned in there. And
he
so
certainly is.
So is Mr. Dillon.
Judy Collins, of course, and Oscar Brand.
Oscar
Gosh.
Brand is a key ingredient in this movie. Why?
I knew of Oscar from the song Something to Sing About, the... Mm-hmm. song that we all had to learn in school. It's the Canadian version of This Land Is Your Land,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
And Oscar's Canadian. I really looked to him very early on when I had this idea of doing this film and wanted to get Oscar's opinion or maybe his blessing because of the reputation that he has. He has the longest running radio show on or anywhere right now.
66 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So he knew all these people, and I thought he was just a great source of information and somebody that would tell me I was going in the wrong direction. Yeah, and it gives me the Canadian content, too.
That's true, because you have Ian and Sylvia in there
Ian
as well.
Ian and Sylvia, Buffy St.
Marie.
Yeah.
And you deal with the blacklisting issue,
yes.
which is very interesting. You know, the artists that were like, well, Buffy St. Marie, for one.
Yeah.
You know, she couldn't do anything. She couldn't do anything down there anymore. It's really nice the way you put the film together, too. Where did you find your crew?
Well, the crew was, I was fortunate to gather a group in New York City because I knew most of my interviews would end up being in that area. And then I had a crew up in the Toronto area, in the Kitchener-Waterloo area, that people that would do some freelance stuff. And people helped me out. Like, you just would not believe it was, I'd like to say it's the barter system. I have to get something back to them someday. So even if it's a good karma, very wonderful, helpful people that were behind the film and wanted to see it to fruition.
You did so many interviews. Did anybody that you talked to, did they talk to you about the music scene today and how it's like performers are almost manufactured through these shows and stuff? Are they sort of, what, you know, did they react?
I had comments. I was very focused on that period of time,
right,
and Greenwich Village, but there were times that we talked about the industry now. And as you probably know, there are many artists who have children that
mm-hmm.
still can't get into the business. You know, Ben Taylor being one, an extremely
right.
talented mm-hmm. singer-songwriter. But it doesn't matter if your parents are James Taylor and Carly Simon. It doesn't work, because there are so many fish in the pool now, and there's so many ways for people to get music out there that I don't want to say it's diluted, but that's sort of one factor from a marketing perspective and a sales perspective. But it's also the star maker machinery, as Joni would say.
Joni would say, yeah.
So she said
right.
that long before it was true, I think. And the people that I interviewed were true songwriters and singers.
Mm-hmm.
And they had beautiful voices, many of them. And they really looked at it as an art form, as opposed to how can I make a buck?
Yeah, exactly. Money seemed to be the last thing.
Yeah.
It was about, they had such a community and such a collective voice, and they were able to affect so much change in a political way, in a social way, in a cultural
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Do you think anything like that, like, is this a series for you? Or are you going to go back to the village and maybe do something on, right? Like, there's so many different scenes going on there. So
there's,
I'm just curious.
Yeah, there were scenes into the 70s and 80s, definitely in Greenwich Village still. And I've had people contact me saying, you know, you've
done the
you should do this, you know, this artist and this artist, Sean Colvin, I believe. And
yep.
Others that went later to the village. And you could go on and on, but I chose the 60s, I suppose, or this decade, because there were so many people coming out at that time. And
mm-hmm.
not just that, it's, to me, what was going on in the background. And the background was civil rights and the Vietnam
That's right.
War and
yes.
women's rights and gay rights. And, you know, the first gay rights protest was also in Greenwich Village.
That's right.
So it just had so much history there that I thought, okay, this is the focus then, this time frame. I could have gone on forever. I think it's I have so much footage.
I was going to say
it would make sense that I probably should have done some sort of 3-4-part series, but I didn't.
I
tried to jam it into one. So.
I'm guessing that the editing process on this would have been wild, you know, because these people are probably very excited to tell their stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long did it take you to edit all this down?
Well, that's not my forte, but
yeah.
I believe that the gentleman that they did a fantastic job with the material they had. I had three editors working on it. And again, it's very hard to edit something when people are enthusiastic and want to get their story out.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'm probably doing right now, I'm not taking a breath between thoughts and ideas. And it's a very hard thing to edit that. And I know that some would say that I should have let people say more than they did, rather than the snippets. But I couldn't have included as many people, and it
mm-hmm.
would have been a very, I think, a different documentary, very focused on a handful of people. And many of the people in the film have biographies and documentaries on them.
That's
alone.
True. Yeah.
So look them up and hear more about each individual. And that was part of the purpose too. Look these people up.
It was very cohesive. That's true. For someone that didn't know anything about that, you know, kids of today, if they come and see the film, they'll be going, oh my God, where was all of this? You know, there was such a collective community, and it's such an exciting film. And where are you going tomorrow?
I am leaving for I'll fly into LAX and drive up to the Santa Barbara Film Festival. And we were very fortunate to get the film into that film festival and even screening on the first weekend.
I know. That's amazing.
So very excited.
It's been an exciting week. And Susan Sarandon. I'm sure you've had lots of people ask you this, but what was it like working with her? And she came here to the Grand River Film Festival.
She did. Well, again, luck. So I've been lucky. She's a lovely person. She's very, very shy. And I think that's probably true of many people that get into the acting profession. They their true persona is probably that of an introvert. And I think she's one of those people. But very generous with her time, very professional. I mean, we recorded in Electric Lady Studio, Jimi Hendrix's studio.
Yes, yeah.
And it was actually in what the sound man said it was his old bedroom. But we met at 10 o'clock, and Susan showed up at exactly 10 o'clock, and she was professional, and I'm impressed with her, and that's really why I wanted her in the film. I love her. I like her politics.
So. Yep, and she's had those politics for a long time, and she's reading from a book by
Suze Rutelow.
Okay,
yes.
On the cover, there's the Bob Dylan album Freewheel, and she's on his arm.
Yes.
She's his girlfriend.
Yes,
and I don't know a lot about Bob Dylan, but I know that she had an influence on his music as well, right?
A big influence, and I mean, again, that's something. The people should go out and research this story. She has a book on the market. And unfortunately, Sue's passed away just over a year ago. She was in the village first. She was living there and met Bob Dylan. And I think they lived together for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
But she was the gal behind the great songs. Because
I
not just the love songs, but the protest songs and Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. She was very politically active and got him into it. And so the misconception is it was not Joan Baez, really. It was Suze that started the ball rolling and started him thinking about different things.
And
an amazing person.
And that's what I learned last night, sitting here as a little music audiophile. I sat there like a little sponge last night learning about so many things. And you're right. After people see this documentary, they're going to want to go out and research all the artists that you talk to.
I hope so.
Yeah, it's a lovely, like, it's a great documentary. It's well put together. It has a whimsical look to it with the little segments, and then there's the music. The music is amazing. Do you have a favorite part of the film?
Music?
Music-wise or interview-wise?
Well, so many of the interviews were great. I really had a lot of fun with everyone. They were so kind and patient and... I originally asked for about 30 minutes, and I got a lot more than 30 minutes from most of them. The music, I think a treat for me was to find that the big three footage, which was Cass Elliott's a house band at the Bitter End in the early 60s. And she just had such a wonderful voice that footage and Melanie, you're hearing Melanie sing, down and... there were some great bits in there that were uncovered.
That's very true. Do you have a? I'm gonna let you go because I know that you have a busy night ahead of you and a great week coming up as well. I can't believe you're sitting here. This is so great. Is there a song I can play for you? I mean, I have "Darling, Be Home
Soon." What
do you
have? John Sebastian.
I have John Sebastian queued up here. Someone.
Do you?
That you
well, John.
To.
John was. Went up to John's house and he was, yep, his wife made us tea. And so play John.
Okay, I will play John. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come in here.
Well, thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
Because I know it's been a busy, crazy day for you, and I wish you all the best. You're going to Santa Barbara. Are you going to other film festivals after that?
I've submitted, so just waiting to hear.
Okay, and the other thing I want to ask you, as I work in an independent video rental store, is this going to be coming out on DVD?
It absolutely will. We will finish the film festival's theatrical, and hopefully some broadcast, and
we can get
a few broadcasters interested.
I can see it on Bravo. I can see it on CBC.
Yeah,
it's a no-brainer.
And call them if you know them, okay?
So, well, they are coming to Waterloo Region, you know, so...
We'll work on it.
Okay.
And then
Kate.
DVD and on demand video, that's that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it'll be out there.
Yay, I'm so happy.
Right. Thank you again.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm going to put on some John Sebastian here, and this is one of my favorite songs, too. This is Darling Be Home Soon on Coral FM.
Come and talk of all the things we did today. Here and laugh about our funny little ways while we have a few minutes to breathe. And I know that it's time you must leave, but darling, be home soon. I couldn't bear to wait an extra minute if you dawdle. My darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I toddled for the great relief of having you to talk to. And now a quarter of my life is almost past. I think I come to see myself at last. And I see that the time spent confused was the time that I spent without you. And I feel myself in bloom. So darling, be home soon. I couldn't bear to wait an extra minute if you got me. My darling, be home soon. Not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I toddled for the great relief of having you to talk to. Gambling girl, gambled all around. Delia was a gambling girl. She laid her money down. All the friends they ever had are gone. Delia's dear mother took a trip out west. When she returned, oh Delia gone to rest. All the friends they ever had are gone.
Diddy's a dirty wind. Diddy's mama moan. Wouldn't have been so bad if the poor girl died at home. All the friends I ever had are gone. Looking high, Cuddy's looking low. He shot poor Delia down with a cruel 44. All the friends they ever had are gone. High up on the housetop, high as I can see, looking for them rounders, looking out for me. All the friends they ever had are gone. Man in a letter, trying to pay us for what? Delia's in the graveyard, boy. 6 feet out of sight. All the friends they ever had are gone. Judge says to Cuddy, what's this noise about? It's all about these rounders, Judge, trying to cut me out. All the friends they ever had are gone. Cuddy says to the judge, what might be my fine? Got 99. All the friends they ever had are gone.
Well, that's some David Johansen and the Harry Smiths, from David Johansen and the Harry Smiths. And Laura has just left the building. She's hoofing her way down to the Princess Cinema because she's got to be there for 7 o'clock. And then tomorrow she's leaving for Santa Barbara to go to the International Film Festival, where the film is screening there, which is great, within the first week, with many other documentaries. So this is that was a thrill to have her in the studio. That was very, very cool.